Studio 360.
One of Americans' big moments of Cold War anxiety came in 1957, when the Soviet Union launched a satellite into orbit before we did, Sputnik. And then, a month later, Sputnik 2, which had a dog on board, Laika, a husky terrier mix they'd found on a Moscow street. Sending Laika into orbit had a scientific purpose, but it was also, even more, I think, a PR stunt. She even wore a little space helmet. The writer John Haskell has this tribute, part fact, part fiction, to the Soviet space dog, Laika.
Once upon a time, there was a dog that wanted to be an astronaut. Well, a cosmonaut, really, because she was a communist dog, a Siberian husky taken in and trained by Soviet scientists. Her original name was Little Curly, but they called her Laika, which means barker, because she made a lot of noise. And she made a lot of noise because she wanted to be the first dog in space. This was 1957. Sputnik was about to be launched, and because there wouldn't be much moving around in the capsule, the scientists were looking for a dog who could learn to be still. And Laika was willing to be that dog. She was willing to learn, or try to learn, her lessons. And by lessons, I mean the repeated behaviors that were meant to become habit. Aristotle called habit the foundation of virtue, and what he believed, I think, is that the value of an action lies partly in its ability to repeat itself, to become something more than just random. You don't hear the word virtue much anymore, and the word habit usually refers to something unwanted or out of control. But Aristotle, from the vantage point of ancient history, saw the development of habit as a way to move toward happiness. And that was all fine with Laika, except the habits she had were not the right habits. She excelled at running and barking and chasing her tail, but the Sputnik people were looking for a dog to be still. And although Laika wanted to oblige, her natural inclination, if there is such a thing, was to constantly be moving. She tried to contain or control that inclination, but there were other dogs who seemed to control it better. So when the scientists set out to select which dog would explore the universe, Laika was nervous. She was nervous when the young scientist took her to an open field behind the barracks and told her to sit. She could see the men by the fence watching her with their stopwatches and their notepads. And when her leash was removed and the scientist started walking away, she thought, okay, be still. And she tried. She tried to just sit there, but the young scientist continued walking away, and Laika felt the desire to move. Oh, and yes, she tried to contain that desire or fight that desire or work through it. And for a while she did. And when the desire faded, she thought she was over it, that she turned over a new leaf. But there was no new leaf. The desire returned, bigger than ever, and she began to think that maybe she shouldn't fight it, that maybe she should move, that her muscles might atrophy or that the man might abandon her. A million logical thoughts made it necessary for her to get up and move. And so she did. And when she did, when she ran to the scientist, of course it wasn't as wonderful or fulfilling as she thought it would be. But by then it was already too late. Her dream would not come true. Some other dog would go into space, and she would remain exactly what she would always be, a loud and useless dog. Except, the scientists were looking for more than just stillness. They could see her desire, and they valued her desire, and in the end, she was the one who was selected to be the dog launched into space. And when the day arrived, she was led out of her basement room, into an elevator, and up into the Sputnik module. The photographers came, lights were shined in her face, and because she understood what was wanted of her, she made the face we think of as a smile. Photos show her, wired to the black box recorder, one ear up, one flopped over, her paws happily crossed, surveying from her padded compartment the possibility of life in space. And then the lights were taken away. The scientist said goodbye, the capsule hatch was closed, and Laika found herself sealed in the darkness. And it wasn't long before she felt the vibrating of the booster rocket, the explosion. And then she felt herself being pulled both by the force of gravity and by the force of the missile rising up, and the next thing she knew, she was floating in space, out of the bonds of atmosphere. We don't know exactly what happened to her up there, but the several versions of events all boil down to basically the same thing. Although the famous satellite remained in orbit for 162 days, after less than a week of orbiting, Laika was dead. And whether it was the heat, or the lack of oxygen, or a poison inserted into her food supply to make her death less painful, Laika knew what was happening. And being a dog, she wanted to do something. She wanted to get up and move. She wanted to escape the wires and the microphones that were holding her in place, but there was no escape. And don't forget, it was almost entirely black up there, so she was blind. And there were no smells in her air supply, and the only thing she could hear was her breathing, amplified by her special helmet. And although she must have felt a certain amount of helplessness, as she sat immobile in her dark capsule, instead of thinking about helplessness, what she did was fall asleep. And in her sleep, she dreamed of Habit. In the dream, she's being chased through the streets of a small Russian town. It's night, and when she hears the voices chasing her, getting closer, she squeezes through a broken door. She finds herself in the kitchen of a small house. Two old people, a man and a woman, are sitting at a table near a stove. When they look at her, it's as if they expected her to be there. She hears a knocking on the door, and she hides under a bed. A young soldier bursts into the room, lifts his hand to strike the woman, and Laika, pressing her nose against the wooden floor, is trying not to move, trying to keep perfectly still, knowing that she has to keep perfectly still or the man and the woman will die. A small beetle crawls across the floor in front of her nose. She leaves it alone. She stays there, motionless, until the soldier changes his mind, spits, and then walks away. And I wouldn't call this a happy dream exactly, but it's basically optimistic. And basically, Laika was optimistic. She believed Aristotle's dictum about habit and happiness, and when she realized she was going to die, she decided to die for a reason. Because she lived in the previous century, the century of optimism, she dreamed of making the world a better place. It's a dream that we, now, in this century, have our doubts about, but Laika believed in possibility. She believed she was contributing to the collective knowledge of the human race, and so, as death began working its way into her system, she remembered the habits she'd learned. She listened to her breathing. She felt the microphone on her skin. She became aware of her heart, which was beating, and because she was harnessed in place, there was nothing to do but let her heart keep beating. Let the blood keep pumping. Let the signals from her heart flow as directly as possible into the small black box. Because she believed that someone would be listening, she stayed alive as long as she could. She was hoping the message emanating from her heart would be clear, wanting the world to hear not just the ticking of a heart, but the possibility that a heart might contain.
The writer John Haskell. There's a version of that story in his book, I Am Not Jackson Pollock.
Recorded on November 6th, 1957, the heartbeat of Laika, the dog, in Sputnik number 2.